This is the 7th of February. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. It's the 7th of February PDP work team call. And on the call, we have Alex Gukuru, Jeff Newman, James Bladel, Alan Greenberg, and Marilyn Cade. And for staff, we have Margie Malam, Marika Koenig, and myself, Glenda Century. And may I ask you all please to say your name when you speak for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, Jeff. Over to you.
Great. Thanks, Glenn. This is Jeff Newman, chair of the PDP work team. And so welcome everyone to the call on February 7th. And today the agenda is to spend a couple minutes talking about logistics for the San Francisco meeting. Very few minutes, and then go into cover the two action items that were left over from the last meeting, and then as quickly as we can to try to work our way through the rest of the document. So we need to summarize. We actually need to finish this up, this list up, so that we can get Marika could put out a draft hopefully by Monday of next week, so that we can all review it, finalize it by the end of the week, next week, so that it can meet the document deadline, which, Marika, remind me of the document deadline date.
This is Marika, 21st of February.
21st, that's 2 weeks. So we need to get onto that schedule, get that document out. Remember, it is a right now it's called draft final, but I think we're going to call it proposed final or something of that nature. To make it clear that, look, you know, we've had a lot of discussion on this, and we know it's a draft, but the goal is that there really shouldn't be too many changes and that we've reflected the last public comment period. So that's the goal, and let's talk about some logistics. So we're working on our schedule for San Francisco. Right now, the times are a little bit in flux. Olga and ICANN staff are working on the schedule. But I think what we need is we're going to be presenting the proposed final report to the council, and I believe it's now scheduled for the afternoon of Saturday, that Saturday afternoon. That's when we're presenting it to them. So we need to have a meeting before that to make sure that we've got all of our ducks in a row, and we may want to have a meeting before that to make sure we have our ducks in a row and make sure that when we're presenting, everyone's good with the slides. And also, that may not be so important, I'll ask you guys, but we do need a meeting at some point during the weekend to talk about our workshop, which will be planned probably for actually, I don't know if I've seen that yet. Marika, do we have a time yet for that one or proposed time?
Yeah, this is Marika. The request I submitted asks for Wednesday morning from 9 to 10:30, but it's not confirmed yet, and I have no idea yet if there are any other meetings that are going to be opposite it, which might mean we need to move stuff, but that's the request I've put in so far.
Right, so we need to decide whether we need a meeting before the presentation to the council or whether we could just present it to the council and then not worry about a meeting before on that Saturday and just worry about a meeting on the Sunday to talk about the report and the workshop. So I want to throw that out for a couple minutes of comment, if anyone cares. Anyone have any thoughts on that? Or do you trust that Marika and I can work this out? Let me ask the question a different way. Is anyone planning on not being there on the full day for Saturday so that we need to kind of take that into consideration? Okay. Hearing silent. Marika, you and I will work it out.
Yeah, Jeff, maybe it's worth as well sending a note to the mailing list asking that same question, as I know that, you know, there are a number of people that are actually not on the call today.
Right. Yes. We'll
of Saturday is an issue, and otherwise we need to see if we can find the time again on Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday is kind of, I'm looking at some of the things that have to happen on Sunday at the council level, and it's looking like a pretty busy day, so we'll see. Okay, with that said, let's go into the two action items from the last call, And there was a couple back and forth. James has just indicated that Sunday is an all-day accountability or affirmation of commitment stay. So that's something we need to keep in mind. Okay, so the action items from the last meeting, one of them I've seen some good back and forth on. It was proposed by Alan. This was one of the items that he had taken back on essentially the appeals if a if the council does not initiate a PDP following an issues report that's requested by an advisory committee. So Alan has drafted language that says that the PDP working recommends that if the GNSO votes to not initiate a PDP following an issues report requested by an AC, the AC or its representative should have the right to a meeting with representatives of the GNSO, and in particular, those voting against the PDP, to discuss the rationale for the rejection and why the AC feels that reconsideration is appropriate. Following this meeting, the AC may submit a statement to the GNSO Council requesting a revote and giving its rationale for such revote. This process may be joined just once for any given issues report. So there was some back and forth. I think at one point there was Alan, you raised your hand, so let me just turn it over to you.
Thank you. I added another comment afterwards because after rereading it, I thought the sense of the discussion, but I may have gotten it wrong, was that the AC can request the vote, implying that the vote had to be taken, and I suggested a modification to reflect that. Most of the comments, I think, were really targeted at that comment and not the original text. So I guess I'd ask for a clarification from any of those people on the call whether the original text was problematic or just the clarification. I don't have much, you know, vested interest in it either way, but I think that may allow us to go through it quicker if we know what the objection was to. Thank you.
Okay, James.
Yeah, I would say, thanks, Jeff. This is James speaking. I would say that primarily my objection was to the added language that the original text is okay. The only, and it's just a semantics issue, is the word right. Something about should have a right. I mean, you either have a right or you don't have a right, in my opinion. I would say should have an opportunity or should have a chance or should have the privilege or whatever we want to call it. I think that if we're providing a recommendation to council that they should listen to the folks who originally requested the PDP without presuming that we know what the outcome of that conversation is going to be, I think I'm totally okay with that.
So just to clarify, I would say something like, as I think Marika is writing at the bottom, the AC or its representative should have the opportunity to meet with representatives.
Yeah, something like that. I think I just think the word right is a couple of things.
Okay, Alan?
Yeah, I don't actually read, although right may be a stronger word than opportunity, I take them as basically the same. And the should I put in because this was a recommendation. The outcome of it, you know, if it ends up in policy, would not be should. It would be they have or do not have the opportunity right. To have the opportunity to, I don't think reads correctly in a bylaw or in the guidebook rules. So it's a semantic issue, though, and I don't think it changes the intent at all. But the should, I think, was just there because this was being phrased as a recommendation as opposed to the outcome rule.
All right. So then, yeah, I think that's right. When it gets into the procedure manual, it'll have to be definitive in one way or another. So I think this is fine with the – let's change it to opportunity. Let's keep it at that, Marika.
Sure.
And then I think we're good on this item.
Okay, just one clarification, because I noticed indeed that Alan proposed to add a small sentence after the word revote, that's saying, but with no requirement that the council agree. Should this be added as well?
Well, I think James said he was fine with this language as written.
Okay.
I'm not sure we need to complicate it.
No.
All right, so you're going to cross out, Marika, the right, and you'll just keep it an opportunity?
Yes. I don't have the option here to do strikeout, so I've put it in brackets and made it red, but I'll delete it now.
Okay. All right. Okay, great. Let's go to 21, which is recommendation 21. One work team member also suggests that the recommendation should include that a response needs to be provided to an SOAC that submits comments. It was agreed to circulate the proposed language on the mailing list to obtain further input. The proposed language is as follows. Comments from ACs and SOs should receive a direct response from the working group. So, Marika, who did that language come from? Is that you, or is that someone submitted that?
This is Marika. That came from Arvrida. So she, I think, submitted two sentences in the chat, and this was the second part that specifically related to this direct response from the working group.
That's right. Okay, so what are you, James, your hand's up. Is that new, old?
That's new, and it's just a question. I remember us discussing this pretty significantly on the call, but I think the question is what constitutes a direct response? And I know it's not fair, Aubrey's not here, but, I mean, if a question is directly addressed in the final report or referencing the comment that it received, is that a direct response, or is it does it need a separate out of band or a separate communication channel letter or something like that? So I guess that's my question: is what constitutes a direct response?
So I think from the discussion, I think we went through this the last time. And I'm not. I think it was that it was okay if it was in the the report as opposed to a letter.
I don't remember us going through it, so I'm sorry if we already resolved it.
I mean, I think at one point Aubrey was talking about a letter, but then we kind of joked back and forth that the response in a letter could just be "Thank you, we've received your comments." But Alan, you have a comment on this?
Yeah, I wasn't here on the last meeting. I missed it, unfortunately. I think I support this, but was there a discussion at that point about why ACs and SOs comments are more equal than others' comments?
Yes.
Okay.
So we had that's how I remember the report going.
Okay, fine. Then I'll back down.
Yeah.
No, Alan, that's a good point. This is James speaking. We discussed that quite extensively, and you're absolutely right to pick up on that. I think that was what I remember of the last meeting, and I don't remember whether or not we determined what a direct response would look like. So.
Yeah. No, but, the rationale for my question was I do support it because I in fact think they are more equal, that they're a formal part of the ICANN body and therefore do, have the right to demand, essentially, you use the word right again, a formal response. Whether it's embedded or not, or separate doesn't really matter to me. But I just wanted to know if it had been discussed. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. And I'm okay. Everyone else okay with the language if we just clarify that to just basically say comments from ACs and SOs should receive a direct response from the working group? So it may not be a part of a report because you could also have a comment period that doesn't necessarily... you don't know whether it's going to be a comment period to a preliminary report, a final report, a survey, who knows what. So you might just want to say something like this may be in the form of a this may be in the form I don't want to use the word response again. What does ICANN use when they do their James, you might have a better idea?
Oh, well, if you're trying to craft some language, I mean, one of it might be should receive a direct response from the working group, such as, or for example, direct reference in the final report.
I guess. Well, I would say instead of final report, say applicable report, because it may be a comment.
Oh, right.
In a preliminary.
Right. Sorry.
Okay. Alan?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to suggest you can put something to the effect of that such response may be embedded in other response documents or separate. But the original question I was going to ask when I put my hand up is, do we want to specify that this is a substantive response as opposed to thank you for your comments?
I think that's a good clarification. So, Marika, do you want to change the word direct to substantive?
It's kind of maybe common as well.
Yes, please.
Sure.
This is Marika. So, first of all, on the direct reference in the political report, the challenge there is that we've also said that working groups can ask for comments on anything. I mean, they could do a survey or they could do specific questions which might not appear in a report. I mean, of course, they can reference, like we always do when we have public comments periods, who have responded. So we do know, like, these are the different groups who have responded, and this was the summary. So I don't know if that's sufficient. I'm a bit worried here that we're writing in language and making it very restrictive on what working groups should or shouldn't do. And also this substantive response, it's very hard, because, I mean, with working groups, we do go through all the comments, and sometimes it's just people say, yeah, noted, thank you, we noted, or we already know it. If you make it substantive, I'm wondering as well if you then go into a dialogue at some point where an AC or SO says, well, you know, you didn't really consider it, you just said noted. And we don't consider that as a substantive response. We want you to, you know, address every single point and comma that we raise. So I'm wondering if we're writing too much into this, which might restrict how working groups deal with these kind of issues, and it comes back as well, you know, more equal than others. Why shouldn't this be done as well for other comments that are submitted? Because other organizations, even if they're not in an ICANN structure, other individuals might also spend a substantial amount of time of developing these comments and would like to see that same kind of a recognition or feedback as well. So I'm a bit concerned if, on the writing as it currently stands, what kind of interpretation that will lead to from working groups.
Okay. Alan, you put a comment in the chat. Do you want to just tack on to that?
Sure. I think Marika's comment makes sense, and I'm happy to withdraw what I said about substantive. And, you know, if an AC or SO is really unhappy with the response, they can follow up at that point. The word substantive does not really make anything happen, and if work groups want to say noted, I think that may be applicable. So I'm happy to just leave it out.
I'm trying to look for language in the affirmation of commitment to talk about what has to be done with public comment, to see if that helps us. I was going to ask James, since you're our resident AOC expert.
Please don't use the X word with me here. There was something I think about. There's something about community participation or something like that. Let me look for it. Well, but I don't want to hold up the group.
Yeah, there may be.
I think there is in language in there indeed that comments should be considered and feedback given or some kind of recognition of what has been done with those comments. But again,
yeah.
I don't think the AOC, the document calls out that this should be done only for ACs or SOs. I think that talks on a general level. So I'm wondering if we're making here the distinction whether we shouldn't fully need the AOC approach, and that should be a general approach. And I think we've done it on other recommendations as well, where we're saying it's really important that working groups take the time to review the comments, and for each of them as well, basically indicate, you know, why they agreed or why they didn't agree or what changes they have made based on those comments. And I think it's a practice that we've done with most working groups, although, again, in some cases that just means noted. And we don't really, you know, distinguish between, you know, individual comments or comments made by ACs or SOs, although, you know, in certain cases we might want to invite or there are already members participating from those groups that provide additional explanation as to why a certain comment was made or what the thinking behind it was, which it's sometimes harder when you have individuals that are not linked to the working group or to the ICANN structure as such.
Okay, let me go to James and then Alan.
Okay, so just real quickly, there is mention in the AOC in 7 and 8 relative to how comments are influencing the policy development process, and it just says something like, you know, it runs as a private sector organization with input from the public. I think, Marika, you're absolutely correct. And I guess, you know, this maybe is a statement directed to Alan. All the working groups I've been involved in, and granted that's only been about 10, this hasn't been an issue. If someone feels that a comment is substantive, regardless of where it's coming from, I think that, you know, they hold the working group to task on that and make sure that that comment is addressed either in the report or directly, or if it's not clear, that we ask staff to reach out to the submitter of the comment to get some clarification. So I guess I've never really seen this as a problem. I feel like we have adequate safety valves within the working group structure to make sure that these things are chafed down. The only comments I've ever seen where someone says, thank you for your comment, your concerns are noted, are those comments that are submitted that reopen or readdress topics or discussions that have been covered extensively on the working group. And I think those are the ones that usually receive the thanks for your concern, we receive your comment type response. But, you know, I think it's a good point. You know, working groups should not be disregarding comments, but I have never really felt that that was an issue. I really think that I think the term we used last week was source agnostic. You know, if a good comment is good and it comes in and it changes the tone or the direction of the topic, then it should be addressed. And if it reopens a lot of old debates, then it should just be noted. So that's just my that's how we came down last week, I think.
Okay, so the proposal is to then take out the word, okay, we have it here, comments from ACs or SOs should receive a response from the working group. I would break it out into two sentences, Marika, and then say this may include, for example, or something like that, just to break it out into two sentences. But essentially, direct reference in the applicable report or embedded in, I think you were going to say a summary of public comments. Is that what you were going to say? Something like that?
I think it was a sentence that James started, embedded in other documents or other applicable documents.
Or other responsive documentation?
I would make it three. It's that, the two you have, or direct response.
Okay. And I think someone, correct me if I'm wrong, embedded is with an E, right? I think. Yeah. Is that right?
I think so.
Okay. Unfortunately, Adobe doesn't have spell check in the comment, in the chat box. Alan, do you have another comment?
I do. And again, this may be reopening the general discussion. I don't quite agree with James in that the world has changed a lot in the 4 years that I've been involved in this. And we went from the point of view where comments were generally completely ignored by working groups, and there was a very strong feeling in ICANN that why should I bother submitting comments because no one ever even reads them, to now where we at least attempt to go through them with some rigor and address them. I think the focus on ACs and SOs was because it was felt to be important that the GNSO GNSO explicitly reach out to ACs and SOs, and the implication is that whatever the ACs and SOs come back with is, you know, has to be taken into account. So, you know, the world is changing. Whether this is a pendulum swinging back and forth and we'll go back to ignoring again, I'm not sure. So I think it is an issue we have to focus on here. It's not a given, and it's not. I don't think we can take it as a given. But I think the wording we have right now is fine.
Okay, great. Should I say your concerns are noted, or would that be improper here? Come on, guys, a little laughter. I know it's
a direct response to him.
I can't punch you, it's probably okay.
I know that was a direct response to him.
All right, let's jump on to recommendation 25, which is, here we go. The PDP work team recommends that even though a working group currently forms the basic mode of operation for a PDP. There should be flexibility to accommodate different working model methods if deemed appropriate by the GNSF Council, or allow for a different mode of operation, if so desired by the GNSF Council in the future, without requiring a complete overhaul of the bylaws or GNSO operating rules. And then Avery had submitted a comment like what? The reorganization is about the use of working groups. I do not believe I could support this clause, as it would allow for the GNSO to council to declare itself supreme and use the legislative committee of the whole again. Until there is another review and result, I believe the GNSO is restricted to working group methods. And Alan disagrees. Perhaps need a supermajority, but the GNSO should have flexibility to do what it needs to do. We are already having problems due to lack of balance in some working groups, and we should not legislate that other modes cannot be used. Draft procedure manual does specify some rules for this. So, Alan, what do you think? Anything else needs to be added to this? I mean, I know Avery won't sign on to it, but
No, I think words we have there are okay. And I was surprised, to be honest. I thought I was making a radical statement when I originally suggested this, and I was the one who did that. And I was rather surprised when I looked at the working group rules, and they're quite specific that, you know, working groups are not the only vehicle, but with the only caveat that if we have other vehicles, that we better have good rules that so we understand how they work. And I think that makes perfect sense.
So should we put in something to maybe sort of address Avery's concerns? And I have to admit, I'm a little bit, you know, on a personal non-chair basis, I'm a little bit worried that if you use another model other than the working group model, that you may be unintentionally doing something else that's not in conformance with a PDP process. And especially for consensus policies, you know, for the contracted parties, it worries me if there's just complete flexibility without making a statement, which I think we can help, is, you know, basically saying that although the council may recommend another mode of operation, all of the other protections of the PDP or something to that effect need to be in place. Just something that you're saying, really, you're talking about a composition of a team that's working on an issue, but you're not compromising any of the other elements that we've all come up with. So, Alan?
Yeah, well, the working group rules do specify that if you come up with a different model, there have to be rules. So it's not going to be done on the fly. But
what about something like rules at least as stringent as the rules set forth in this document or something like that?
I hate judgment calls like that because anyone can nitpick and say, I don't agree.
Yeah.
I mean, the example I'll give is one of the problems we've had on a number of working groups is lack of balanced representation. You know, that the task force said there shall be one from each or N from each constituency in that world. And we don't have anything comparable here. I can imagine coming up with a modified work group where there must be balanced participation plus others. You know, so we're not losing the other people can participate, but we're forcing an issue of some level of balance. You know, I can imagine coming up with rules saying if votes are taken, they're taken by the balanced group and not by the work group as a whole, but all participants can enter into the discussion. You know, I'm not suggesting any of those are good. I'm just saying I can imagine coming up with modifications of the work group rules which address some of the failures that we've had and some of the problems that we've had, and I don't think we should be ruling them out because we haven't thought of the details yet. And
so, Marie,
it's a rather onerous thing to make a change to these procedures once we lock them in.
So Marika has put a paragraph in the chat. If you all want to take a second to look through it. And Marika, do you want to add to that, or is that what you were going to say?
Yeah, this is Marika. So basically, I think foreseeing what Alan is saying, it was also matches what is in the GNSO working group guidelines. Basically, look, GNSO can decide to, you know, for whatever reason, to use another model than a working group model. But before it does so, it needs to specify the rules and procedures that, you know, are part of that new model or hybrid or whatever form it would take. So I think in, you know, the comments that both Avery and Alan made are covered, because it's not something that just can be done like that. It needs to be specified what that means and how it would run. And at that stage, of course, people could come in as well saying, well, if you take something else, you will still need to follow the PDP model. So, of course, otherwise it's not policy. So I think that there are certain barriers that are built in this language to make sure, you know, that the different views are covered and it cannot be changed just like that. But there is an opportunity, if there's a real reason to follow a different model, that can be done.
So here's what concerns me, and I do remember, I know James says he's more in Alan's camp on the chat. I'm actually a little bit more in Avery's camp, just because I remember what it was like when the council appointed itself as its own committee to do everything. And it really lacked the participation from the public, and it really was a bad working model, and it was really the council acting more like a legislature. So it worries me that it says the council can then just elect to have different procedures on its own. It does almost seem like we can go back to that kind of that kind of model, and I don't want to get back into that model just because the council selects another mode for conducting PDPs. I think it makes me nervous, and just remembering the way it was before. So let me go to Alan and then James.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether this particular rule is going to end up in the bylaws or in the operations manual, but almost regardless, the GNSO Council can make changes. It's just a question of what documents need to be changed. Not all of these changes are approved with a majority, whether it's these rules we're writing now or some new ones. We don't typically use supermajorities for that. So we're not changing the rules that the GNSO Council can make the rules. We're just saying how onerous is it, and how awkward is it to do. And I think saying that the working group model is the only model, when we already know that there are some problems, maybe they'll get fixed as we learn to use it better, or maybe we need to make some tweaks. But I think it's foolish to cast in concrete the fact that it is the only model. And since the working group rules already address it, and we've approved those rules, or we're close to approving those rules, I don't remember which. Okay.
Yeah, we're actually... Yeah. So it's a public comment period. The council has it closed on the 8th. There's the working group rules. But again, this is especially for a PDP that may be a consensus policy. Again, it makes me kind of nervous. But let me ask James his thoughts.
Well, Jeff, this is James speaking. Thanks. And, I guess I was solidly in Alan's camp, but now that I'm reading the paragraph that Marika wrote, I'm seeing that this is for a consensus policy. And therefore, I think that we do need to follow some sort of, we need to have some consistent expectations on how we would arrive at consensus policies that are going to alter contracts. So I think I'm going to now put myself into either the middle ground or more into the Avery Jeff camp on this. I'd like to see the council have flexibility for tackling issues outside of the PDP process with drafting teams and pre-PDPs and other sort of fact-finding committees and whatnot that it can do on the fly and essentially constitute and dissolve as necessary. But when it comes to a PDP, I think now you are correct. We need something that is something that needs a little bit more of a formal process. Thanks.
Alan?
Well, I think you're looking at it from one side of the picture only. I think it can work well against contracted parties to have the current working group model. It just depends who gets the troops out for the working group. If you have a PDP that is going to look at consensus policy, and the non-contracted parties wave their flag more and get 100 people to the 12 that the contracted party peoples have, you're going to be at a disadvantage in the set of rules. So I think it can go both ways, and I'm not sure who's going to benefit if we change these rules. I don't think it's at all clear that it's going to go against contracted parties.
Yeah, I think you certainly make a good point, Alan. And I think, so what do we have, Marika, currently in the bylaws on this, or that we propose to be in the bylaws?
This is Marika. I think it's only covered in the procedure manual. I'm just scrolling up in the document to see if there's anything specific in the proposed bylaws.
So there's nothing about how an issue goes through the PDP?
I don't think it talks there about that, you know, a working group is required or anything like that. It just outlines the required steps, but it doesn't talk actually about how it needs to be done. That's more outlined in the procedure manual. I don't know if Margie has any. I'm just scrolling through, so I might be missing something. I don't know if Margie has a different recollection of that.
Yeah, this is Margie. I don't think so. I don't think it specified the type of group to be used. I think the thinking behind that was if you look at the current Annex A, it talks about task forces, which obviously we don't, you know, use anymore. And so following, you know, the theme of the restructuring and the BGC report of allowing flexibility so that as the council, you know, processes change, you don't have to modify the bylaws. I think we left that out.
So what page in this report does the bylaws start on, the proposed?
Marika,
do you know?
Page 54.
I didn't go far.
All right, so we kind of need to review that. So, guys, which language? So we have Marika, the language that was there. We have Avery. We have the original language, which was that even though a working group currently forms the basic mode of operation, there should be flexibility to accommodate different working methods if deemed appropriate by the council or allow for a different mode of operation, if so desired by the council in the future without requiring a complete overhaul of the bylaws or GNSO operating rules. Do we need to keep this one as an open action item?
How about if we use words in accordance with the PDP procedure manual?
Well, but the procedure manual could be basically changed.
Yeah, right, but there are words there that talk about using other models.
I think what needs to happen is people need to review the bylaws and make sure that all the protections they expect are in the bylaws, and therefore changing the composition of a group may not, so long as you follow the bylaws, may not have a significant impact.
Okay.
So I think that's what people need to do. I know I need to do it on a personal level, and I'm sure others do as well. So why don't I recommend that, and then we'll move on to the next item.
Okay.
Okay. The next one is linking policy development with strategic planning and budgeting. This is the one we all threw up our hands the last time and said we have no idea what this really means. So we recommended that the initiation of a PDP may include consideration of how ICANN's budget and planning can best accommodate the PDP and or its possible outcomes. And we suggest including and how the proposed PDP is aligned with ICANN's strategic plan to the end of the sentence. This will further prevent frivolous PDPs and unnecessary wasting of ICANN's and the community's limited resources. So do people mind updating that, adding those words? I think that's in line with what the question was, so I think that's... Does anybody object to that, Alan?
Yeah, as I read it, that doesn't preclude the council deciding to go ahead with it, even if it's not aligned, but they should consider it. I mean, again, it's almost the same discussion as the previous one. We are not always prescient and fully understanding of how the world is unfolding. The strategic plan may well have a hole in it, and if an issue comes up that GNSO feels must should be addressed quickly, it should be addressed even if it's orthogonal to the strategic plan. So as long as we're not precluding that, I have no problem saying consider it.
Jeff, it's Marilyn. I can't seem to raise my hand electronically.
Sure. Go on.
On this particular point, I would support what Alan just said. I'm all of us are. Maybe we have varying degrees of understanding of how ICANN develops its strategic plan. It's not as it's not very granular, and it's not at this point particularly bottom up. So while I don't object to including those words, I think we need to understand that the strategic plan is also a 3-year evolving document, while the operating plan is a yearly rolling document. Because it's so high level, it may be appropriate to use the language that's been proposed, but I do think we need to ensure that the council and the stakeholder groups and the SOs could provide redirecting guidance, and then the operating plan and the budget would be the first ones that were amended. But the strategic plan would probably not be easy to change. Because of the timing cycle.
Yeah. I think that's right. But I think the only language here really is just So James, do you want to talk a little bit more about your proposal then?
I'm sorry, I was multitasking. We're still talking about Recommendation 28, correct?
Yeah, the strategic plan.
Okay, well, the key here, and I'm just going back to the beginning because I haven't really looked at this since submitting the comment here, but the key here is that we want to ensure that there are some boundaries or limitations of what ICANN will choose to involve itself in, whether that's through its defined mission or scope or the AOC or, something that's, aligns with what it says it would do in the budget or the strategic plan, what it said it would pursue in the coming, rotating 3-year period. So I think that, the key here is just to keep ICANN grounded in what it's in its established mission and not on a PDP basis allow it to go tilting windmills. So that, that was the general sentiment, I think, behind submitting this text.
I have a follow-up question for James then.
Sure.
James, what I'm hearing is a concern about the PDP process in some way resulting in expanding ICANN's role. I frankly think it's highly unlikely, given the requirement of votes that and work that it actually takes to do a PDP. But my comment was about supporting Alan's suggestion that if the council voted to initiate a PDP process, even if it wasn't in line with the strategic plan, that the strategic plan is a 3-year rolling document and may represent certain inflexibilities. So I could even give an example, even though I didn't support the idea that ICANN should become involved in an operational cert, the idea that ICANN has responsibilities in SSR is something that the business user constituency supports. But the strategic plan might not have, until it was updated, might not appropriately reflect current events that are going on in a particular area.
Yeah, so the strategic plan is a lagging document versus the what we would call the situation on the ground, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, if the council decides that an issue is sufficiently, you know, important and it has the votes to initiate a PDP, you know, I think that we should leave some flexibility for their discretion in that regard, but I do believe that, you know, if something is outside the strategic plan or outside the budget, it should be understood or acknowledged. You know, for example, and maybe this is a really bad example, but I'm just going to put this out here as a possible example, was the Who Is Studies. You know, I think a lot of folks were working towards initiating and defining some Who Is Studies, but when it came time to actually, you know, start to launch those studies, we were like, oh, you know, shoot, we forgot to include these in the budget, and they're going to be something like $400,000. So, you know, I think that there's the other side of that too, and it's just really a management coordination communication issue where we want to make sure that the left hand just knows and understands what the right hand is doing and what kind of an impact that's going to have on the organization financially. And, you know, we want to make sure that the strategic plan and the budget are meaningful documents. So if we can craft language that threads the needle, that captures, I think, concerns from both sides of this coin, I think that would be ideal, but I don't know. I think it's possible, but I'm not sure how.
Alan, you have a comment on that?
Yeah, I support what James is saying, and the strategic plan is a lagging document. I know from at largest point of view, we've been tilting at windmills for several years, and we're delighted this year when things actually showed up in the document that we've been talking about. And from a GNSO point of view, which has a more restricted set of tools it can use, initiating a PDP on something is, in fact, one of the tools it has of forcing ICANN to address something which is otherwise ignored in a plan and may make it go into a plan. So, you know, I think we need flexibility. Reminding council that it should consider this as an issue, that's fine. But I don't think it should be much stronger than that. Thank you.
James, what do you think of that?
I can go along with that, sure.
Marika, do you capture that?
No, I didn't.
Not sure what I said.
Everyone's multitasking. All right. Alan, do you want to repeat that?
I'm not sure repeating it. I'm just saying, well, part of what I was saying is not to be captured. The PDP process is one of the tools that GNSO has for causing the ICANN organization to focus on things which may not have been addressed in the strategic plan. Very few of the PDPs are things that are directly linked to strategic plan issues, other than at a very, very esoteric level. So I think the words that I see there, you know, should include consideration of how it can best accommodate it. The answer may be, ICANN better damn well find some money to do this because it's important.
So the language as it states now, it says, recommends that the initiation of the PDP may include consideration of how ICANN's budget and planning can best accommodate the PDP and or its possible outcomes.
And the answer may be the budget has to be adjusted.
Right. Do we want to add strategic? Well, you can't really alter, as Marilyn's saying, it's hard to alter the strategic plan, although they do it every, you know, they do report against it every year at least.
Lag, though, to get things in that are suggested at the periphery of the organization. At least so far it has been.
I think the word... Yeah. But I'm still thinking that this wording kind of covers it. James, and Paul, well, James is on the call. How
yeah,
wedded are you? What's that?
Yeah, Paul's not here.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, which version are we reading off of again? The
Build original.
It's on the right-hand side of the screen, outstanding issues, page 26.
No, I'm looking at which column?
First column.
First column on the right.
Now,
about
on the left. And then your column on the right is the one that indicates what you had proposed. And I'm asking how wedded are you to what you proposed, or can you live with the language that's there based on what Alan was saying? And you could put and strategic planning, but
Just a second here.
How about adding, and if applicable, how the proposed...
Well, you know, I think if we're saying, you know, consideration of how ICANN's budget planning can best accommodate the PDP and its possible outcome, I think that's okay if we can strengthen it just a tad and say... And acknowledgement when the council feels that a proposed PDP would fall out is not aligned with the strategic plan or the budget. I don't know, just something, you know, when something is really coming out of the blue, and I think that, you know, Marilyn, this goes to Marilyn's point, we want to make sure that there's flexibility to do that if the situation is changing rapidly, and we need that capability. But, I think it's not too onerous to ask the council to at least acknowledge that.
How about adding, if applicable, between and how? Means of value judgment has to be made.
Yeah.
Because some PDPs, I think,
yeah,
are just not... They're so far away from the level at which the strategic plan is talking that it's not a relevant statement.
James?
Sorry, I was typing, not speaking. I just said I was okay with Alan's suggestion.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I was not able to... There you go. Trying to read everything at once here. Okay, so let's move on to recommendation 30. Sounds like we're good. Marika, now have you captured that?
Yes, I did.
Awesome. All right, recommendation 30. The PDP work team recommends modifying Clause 9 of Annex A, which I know everyone here has memorized, of the ICANN bylaws to reflect the current practice that a summary and analysis of the public comments received is to be provided by the staff manager to the working group, which will be responsible for reviewing and taking into consideration the public comments received. And there you go. No comments to that. I'm assuming that's a good suggestion.
No, there is a comment if you have to scroll back up to the right-hand side.
There you go, from Avery. Should add documenting the result of the consideration. So it would say, which will be responsible for reviewing and taking into consideration the public comments received, and she would add something like, for reviewing and taking into consideration a document. Now, I guess, hold on, let me see how that would fit in. Documenting the results. Okay, James?
Yeah, real quickly, it's a shame that Avery isn't here because I would ask her for some clarification on this comment. I think the recommendation is talking about the summarization of comments that staff will do, but then Avery's comment is pointed to more towards the actions of the working group. So I guess I'm not following. There's a little bit of a disconnect here, at least for me.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that relates. We do have in other recommendations, I believe.
This is almost parallel to the recommendation of what the working group needs to do with comments, whether it's coming from an SO or AC or just, you know, from a public, from an individual in the public. Whereas I think this recommendation 30 is talking about the staff's role in summarizing the comments, not really talking too much about, I think that last sentence there is telling staff not to opine on the comments, that that's the purview of the working group. And so then to comment on what the working group should do with the comments, I think belongs somewhere else. Maybe I'm reading it wrong, but that's my takeaway on this.
No, I think that's a good comment. Alan?
Yeah, I think this is the generalized part of what we were talking about for ACs and SOs before. Now, whether the last clause, which will be responsible for reviewing and taking into consideration the public comments received, belongs here or in a separate recommendation, we can separate it out, obviously. But I think Avery was modifying that clause to say they're not only responsible for taking into consideration, but writing down what it is they, how it is they did this. In other words, they can't just say mm-hmm and fulfill their obligations. They're obliged to document at some level what they've done. Now, whether we separate it out or not is moot from my point of view, but I think her point is well taken.
Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I think James is right here, because if you look at the original or the language as it currently stands in provision 9 of the bylaws, it basically talks about that the staff manager is responsible for reviewing documents received and adding those deemed appropriate for inclusion in the staff manager's reasonable discretion to the task force report or initial report. Basically, as the language now stands, it is staff deciding what is relevant and what isn't and what should be included. So I think the intent of this recommendation is just to change the fact that it's the working group that should be responsible for that. But noting, you know, Avery's point, that might fit with the next recommendation, which at this moment is very general, and maybe it's a specific point she wants to make, looking at the procedure manual and seeing what language is currently in there that talks more about how working groups should review comments or what they should do with it.
Well, it still says in the report that the PDP recommends providing further guidance on how to conduct public comment periods and review public comments received as part of the PDP manual.
Right, so there are no specific details included there. So I don't remember exactly what is in the report, so it might be worth maybe for the next call that we actually look back what language is there to see if that matches what Avery talks about, that, you know, a working group is also responsible for providing people or giving the results of the reviews of their comments back to those that have commented, something that we've been doing in practice, or at least documenting how the different comments have been discussed and whether it led to any changes in the report or not. So it might fit more with discussion on that item. And again, I don't know exactly what is in the procedure manual now, so it might be worth looking at that and seeing if that indeed accommodates the fact of, you know, having working groups responsible for reviewing and addressing comments, but also I think Avery talks in our next comment about maybe mentioning some of the innovative methods that could be used. But again, I don't know exactly what we currently have in there.
Yeah, so that's Alan's comment on the next one. You're right. So why don't we group those two together and figure out. So Alan, I do agree that it's with James that this comment and with you, Marika, that the comment recommendation 30 should stick to what the staff does, and then recommendation 31 should be what the work team does with the results of the public comment periods. And Alan's comment of do we want to mention the other ways that we've used
the
procedures manual? Yeah.
Yeah. The reason I added that is, right now, there's a fair amount of interest in ICANN of trying to fix the public comment process, acknowledging that it's not working very well right now and looking at ways to do it. And I think a recommendation here from us may push that process along a little bit, you know, encouraging looking at innovative ways, since the traditional, you know, put a comment here is not working very well. So I, you know, I'm not adamant about it. I was just suggesting that maybe we want to seed the discussion a little bit by saying we need to be flexible and innovative on this to make it work.
So, Marika, can you please add Aubrey's comment to 31? We'll just include it says recommends providing further guidance. Before we, instead of saying further guidance, we'd say recommends that the PDP work team recommends that a working group document, what does she say, documenting the results. Document the results of consideration of public comments. And then another sentence, kind of like what Alan's saying, which may include...
No, my one is not documenting the comments, but the form that the
taking the comments, yeah.
Takes.
Well, don't we say that early? Well, no, that's kind of an initial... We do say that a working group... We do say in places that the working group can initiate public comment periods at its discretion. And what I thought we said in there, too, at least we did in the initial report, was about taking surveys or answering specific questions that the work group had about specific issues, either from the charter or in general.
Then maybe we just need to incorporate that into our recommendation.
Right.
Sounds like we already thought of it and then forgot it.
Marika, can we take that recommendation and put it in here?
Yeah, it doesn't work. I need to check back where we cover that. I'm quickly looking through the procedure manual, but I think I see there that we actually didn't provide much details on other mechanisms for public comments or talking about how working groups should address those. So that's an item that we might need to put a little bit more information on in the report. I think I might check back as well with the Digital Working Group guidelines, because I do believe we put in somewhere there as well this notion that the working group should are responsible for reviewing the comments and then addressing them, or at least indicating how they've been addressed, so I can check if there's any language maybe there.
Yeah, I would think Avery's comment doesn't belong in this sentence, but in a follow-on one.
Right.
And this is Marika. I'm wondering as well, I mean, I don't know if we need to specify all of that in the recommendation itself, but as I said, I think it might be appropriate to elaborate on those kind of things maybe in the procedure manual. Indeed, if we have a separate section on public comment periods, indicate there that, you know, what are the requirements or which are the mandatory ones, that a working group should also be feel free to do a public comment period whenever they deem it appropriate. And there might be the appropriate place to talk about, you know, the expectation or that comments are also or that working groups are held accountable so they can actually track what has been done with comments and maybe even link to some examples. This is how certain working groups have done that in the past. Talk about maybe other means of doing, you know, getting input, such as surveys, workshops, or maybe there's more language that is more appropriate to put actually in the procedure manual than to try to squeeze it all into a recommendation, which might be seen as too limiting or where we might miss other things that need to be added. So I don't know if people have time or want to suggest some language that we might want to include in the procedure manual on that issue, which where it might fit better.
Okay. Alan, any comments on that? James?
Not here.
No comments on that, Jeff.
Okay. We ready to move on to the next one, or Marika, do you still need more guidance?
Well, this week I'm not clear now on are people unhappy that we leave the recommendation as is, and in the action items I request people to review what's in the procedure manual and make further suggestions to capture those points, or would you like me to make some suggestions, or when I do my updates, provide some additional language in the procedure manual that people then can review? What is the preferred approach?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think both, but I also think, you know, kind of what Alan was saying before about, you know, moving, saying a couple of things, looking back at the first thing you should do is look back at some of the comments you raised. I think it's when initiating a comment period to a charter, or, the first one that you made, that the council, not the council, the working group has discretion to initiate a public comment period when the group is just formed. I think we talk there about some stuff that the council can do as far as surveys or responses to specific questions. Then our other guidance on the results are, you know, to kind of mention what Avery has in there. And then I think your third item is what you said, which is reviewing or making suggestions at other things that we've used in the past or things that we could do for both the solicitation and consideration of public comments. I'm hearing silence. Marika, you still there?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Sorry,
okay.
I didn't realize you were waiting for confirmation from my side, but.
All right. Hey, yeah, thanks. Okay, next one. This is kind of a long one. This one's not long. Sorry, the one after that's long. PDP, this is implementation, impact, and feasibility. PDP working recommends that work groups provide input on issues related to implementation, impact, economic, business, social, operational, et cetera, and feasibility, including when considered appropriate. Colon, and then it goes on. Aubrey says, do we want to add that a working group remains open, though dormant during it's such time as its recommendations have been acted on by the board? Marika, do you have a comment on that?
Yeah, this is Marika.
Yeah.
I think we sort of covered this in one of the previous items where we spoke about this implementation recommendation team, where we said that either the work team remains open and input can be received through that mailing list or the dormant working group, or if the working group has been closed, a new call for volunteers goes out and a new group is created. So I think the challenges with keeping groups dormant is that people move on and might no longer be there with the same mail address or no longer interested in the issues, because in some cases from start to finish it can take very long. If you look at new GTLDs, for example, in those working groups, if we would have to go back now to those original mailing lists, half of the people might no longer be in the same jobs or have the same email addresses. So I think that might pose challenges. So I think the language as it is written in one of the previous recommendations related to the implementation review team might capture that and saying if it's still there, that's a group that will deal with it. If not, a similar group would be constituted or a sub-team formed that would address any questions that might arise.
Okay, James?
Just a quick question here, and I don't know if it's directed at the original language, but probably more at Aubrey's comment. Why the board? Why not the council? And I totally agree with what Marika was saying, essentially with the Fast Walks working group being a good example where there was, almost 2 years in between that time. If we had to reconstitute that group now, it would be pretty much impossible. So I think that once a working group has submitted its recommendations to council, and the council has either, adopted those or decided to move with those, doesn't that essentially effectively mean the end of the working group? I mean, you may want to reconstitute other groups to implement those things, but the formal PDP working group, to me, is then concluded. So that's just more of a question relative to, I think, Aubrey's comments about why the board, not the council.
Yeah, and I'm also looking at the language thinking, why shouldn't the council have the ability to create a new team if it wanted to? I mean, why does it have to be the existing working group? They should be available for questions for the council, but I think, James, you're right on the board as well. So it sounds like not everybody here agrees with Aubrey's comment. Alan?
Well, I think the comment is wrong in one sense, that if you look at what happens, the involvement with the working group in terms or a quasi-working group in terms of implementation actually happens after the board has acted. The staff in general doesn't start implementing things until the board has said, yes, it is what ICANN is going to do. So the timing that she mentions, I think, is wrong also.
So do people just think then the language should just remain as is?
I thought we had some words somewhere else.
Yeah, well, that's what Marika was saying, that we do have language from other parts that we can just bring into here as well.
Yeah.
So I think once we do that, it seems like everybody else agrees that we don't need to update it as Avery has suggested.
Yep.
Okay. That sounds good. Recommendation 39, the PDP work team recommends to provide additional... Oh, this is the real long one. This is on picking and choosing specific recommendations from within a report. We had recommended that the working group should indicate in its report which recommendations should be taken together, and it's basic... let me read this part. PDP work teams... Working groups should be encouraged to indicate which, if any, recommendations are interdependent so the GNSO Council can take into account as part of their deliberations. And then we express our concern that the Council has been picking and choosing or modifying recommendations, but recognize that it's the Council's prerogative. Avery questions why it's the Council's prerogative, it shouldn't be the Council's prerogative, and that we should make sure that the process has been open, fair, and complete, and then to pass it on with a vote. There has also been discussion of the GNSO Council adding an addendum to the recommendations giving any advice or opinions, but the idea of them having to what amounts a line out of veto on recommendations is unacceptable. So we spent a lot of time talking about this in several months ago, and it went, just to remind us of the discussion, it went back and forth. There are some that agree with Avery. There are some that agree, look, it's ultimately the council. But I think in the end, we basically put the onus on the working group to basically say, look, these need to be considered together. I'm not sure anything else is really feasible at this point. But, I mean, does anyone think that we should basically say an absolute prohibition on the council picking and choosing recommendations? Alan?
Yeah, I'm one of the ones who support the ability of the council to do that at some level. It comes down to really a discussion council had at infinitum at its last meeting of, is it legitimate to take a motion with several parts and break the parts out for voting individually on them? And I personally think it is. I think it's important to identify things for which there is consensus and things that which there is not. In the case of a PDP, the board may reject the recommendation from council because it feels that council shouldn't have only picked parts of them. But I think if a work group produces a result and the GNSO can agree wholeheartedly on half of the items and not on the other ones, and the work group has not identified them as being linked, linked at birth, and they have to maintain that linkage, I think it's a reasonable action of council to do part and not the rest. That's my opinion. So I support a recommendation saying that. As you point out, we've been divided on this.
So let me go to Margie. Well, I don't know which one was first, Margie or Marika, so I'll let you guys decide which one, and then James has yielded the floor to you guys.
Marja, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, this issue I've been grappling with over the last few months. I don't really know what the right answer is, whether you could pick or choose recommendations. I do think there's a possibility, though, that a working group's recommendation, the working group might feel that their recommendations are linked. In other words, that maybe maybe one of the approaches could be that the working group, if they feel they're linked, would say so in their report, and maybe there would be a situation where the GNSO Council wouldn't be allowed to pick or choose, but if they were silent about it, then there's more flexibility there. It's just a thought. I can see it, issues on both sides as to, whether you have to take all the recommendations or just part of them. Maybe some of them are more important or urgent than others, and I just think it'd be useful just to clarify, at least from this working group, what it thinks is the right answer.
Well, I think, and Alan has pointed out with this last one on the REP group, there were, 12 recommendations for future work, and, I know that wasn't a PDP, working group, but assuming it was, if there are that many recommendations and a lot of work generated out of those recommendations, then at some point the council may need to prioritize those and may need to pick and choose, even if the working group says, well, these are all tied. And that did happen. So, Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. It's more to the last part of this recommendation, and just wondering if there's anything that we could make stronger there or provide some examples. Because what I have seen in certain cases where recommendations come up from a working group, even those with unanimous consensus, and then are turned down or rejected by the council without any real opportunity for the working group to actually defend or explain their recommendation or have an opportunity of saying, well, we do still think this is important. Would you accept it with X, Y, Z changes? And I'm wondering if, you know, it's sometimes hard because before certain recommendations get to the council, it takes time. Working group might not even want to look at it anymore, but I'm wondering if there should be a kind of process where more feedback is as well provided from the council level, and indeed maybe even given back to a working group before it's even voted upon and saying, well, you know, this recommendation is not going to pass as it currently is because we think for X, Y, and Z reasons, and allow a working group an opportunity to say, okay, in that case, you know, we see your point of view and we agree to modify it like this, or say, well, no, we don't agree and we still want to put it forward and, you know, hence it will get voted down. But just wondering if that's another item that should be considered.
Let me go to James and then Alan.
Thanks, Jeff. James speaking. I think I'm supporting Margie's idea, and I think it's somewhat aligned with what Alan was saying. I support the idea that the council should be able to, that the responsibility is on the working group to notify council when recommendations are interdependent. And also, I think the flip side of that would be when recommendations are in conflict with one another. Suppose that you have a working group that's divided right down the middle on two mutually exclusive recommendations, and so that's essentially highlighting a choice. Of course, the choice could be neither, I suppose. But I think that, you know, we probably should impress upon council somehow that, you know, breaking up a package of recommendations that the working group has identified as interdependent is not only strongly discouraged, but we may even need something formal there to prevent that from happening. One possible approach would be, and I think that this has been done in the past, which would be the working group working in conjunction with their council liaison to actually draft a motion that will be brought up before the council. So it's essentially not just left to the wind. I think that some of the earlier working groups I was participated in were responsible for drafting, at least putting together some rough language of what the council motion would look like, and the last couple of working groups that seems to have gone away. So, and maybe I'm misremembering it. Maybe it only happened once, but I just wanted to put that out there as one possible way that the working group could communicate to council the way it feels that the different recommendations are organized.
So we already have that definitely in there, that concept covered, that the working group may, at its discretion, working groups should be encouraged to indicate which, if any, recommendations are interdependent. You did use a little bit stronger language in something you said, or do you think that that's it? I mean, it's basically an encouragement, but ultimately the council can choose, or would you say the council should be prohibited? I mean, are you being that strong?
I would use discouraged rather than prohibited.
So you're saying that the council is discouraged from, or the PDP, yeah, that the council should be discouraged from
separating recommendations or itemizing recommendations that the PDP working group has identified as interdependent.
Yeah, I think that's a good sentence. Marika, you got that?
Yes.
Okay, Margie, your hand's up. Is that new, old?
Sorry, that's old.
Okay, Alan.
Yeah, I like the where we're going. I guess I'll put my stake in the ground. I think Avery's original statement, and it's a recurrent theme of some people, that the council is purely there to verify that the process has been followed. If that was the case, we wouldn't need counsel with representation from contracted parties and non-contracted parties. We'd need a good old judge who can read the rules and say, did you follow them? Ultimately, counsel has the ability to trash the whole PDP, so counsel is making value judgments on the substance. And I think it's foolish to say that especially in the kind of case where James identified of a working group which is very divided, saying remanding it back to that same working group, I don't think necessarily is going to be a productive thing. And ultimately, counsel has to make decisions on the substance. And it does it, whether it does it by voting down the whole thing or voting for the whole thing or on parts. And as long as it has that right, it is not simply looking at process. And therefore, I think it's foolish to try to segment it, to reduce its authority. So I like the kind of words we're doing. If things are linked together, counsel should have an awful good reason for delinking them. But if they're not explicitly linked, then I think it's fair game for counsel to say, yes, we're doing some and not the other, whether it's a priority issue or a value judgment on the content. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Alan. And I think using words like discourage, I mean, this is probably, of all the places in the report, this and making sure that staff reports or reports to the board are made public are probably the strongest language we use in the entire, in all of our recommendations. So I think that approach, adding the words discourage, I think is good. Obviously, Avery may have a minority statement on that, but I think at least the way we're discussing it now, it seems like we're heading in the same direction.
Yeah, I'd be interested in having you take off your chair's hat and give your opinion.
I'll take off my chair's hat, fine, and I agree with you, Alan. I do think that there needs to be some discretion. It should be discouraged, but you know, for issues of resource, for issues of getting certain work done, and others, I think that the council should have. It shouldn't make new policy. It shouldn't, you know, it shouldn't amend the report, but it should be able to pick and choose based on a wide variety of different factors.
Thank you.
But thank you for asking for my opinion.
Well, I thought you were going to come to support Avery, actually, so I was interested in hearing it.
No. I think that's just too dramatic. If it comes to a point of amending things, then that's when I have a problem.
Okay.
But if it's just picking and choosing and a discouragement from it, then I think it's fine. Okay, translation, another item we spent a lot of time talking about. The comment from Paul and James, starting on line 1076, the report should note that ICANN should not default to paid translation as this will incur more time and costs. Rather, multilingual volunteers should be sought for translations of key documents. We offer suggested language at line 1114. Let me go to that in the report. So what do people think of this? If you go to, so that's page,
it doesn't make it, the line numbers probably don't match. There's something off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they don't.
So you need to go to the actual section on that. I'm just looking it up.
That's translation.
That starts on page 41.
Wow.
And the words added are at the bottom of page 43, going into 44.
Okay, yeah, so it says, ICANN should not default to paid translation as this will incur more costs. Rather, multilingual volunteers should be sought for non-governing translations of key documents, important PDP. I think there's some grammar missing there. Important PDP should by ICANN into the five languages. I think we're missing a couple words. Anyway, Alan, thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah, this is an issue that at large has pushed for heavily. Some people in at large have pushed for heavily for as long as I've been on the ALAC, and it's not one I supported because volunteers don't always meet their commitments, and volunteers aren't always as good as they say they are, and it's very hard to take volunteers, a volunteer who doesn't do a very good job, and reject them. You know, it's a hard thing for ICANN to do, of picking and choosing among volunteers for quality or ability to meet the demand. And that was confirmed in a discussion we had with the ICANN translation people at our last meeting. And they said there are costs, and there are non-trivial costs, of trying to manage a volunteer workforce like that, especially one that is likely to be physically distributed and not always manageable. And so although ICANN is looking at using volunteers in certain things, to do it in documents where there are timelines and implications of the quality not being up to speed is a very onerous thing. So I would get some input from the translation people on this before we went forward with something in this level of document to suggest we use volunteers. I'm not against the concept, but I think the implementation is far more requires far more understanding than I think we have. So,
I think so one of the concerns I have about volunteers as well, and maybe James can address it, is I mean, how much do we really trust it? Someone's got to review it anyway. But James,
hi Jeff. So Paul and I felt pretty strongly, and we were both aligned on this. I'm fortunate enough to be bilingual in that I speak both English and American, so I think it simplifies my participation in ICANN. No, I mean, in all seriousness, one of the things that's always impressed me about ICANN is that there are folks that are doing just as much work and doing a very good job in a volunteer capacity as I am, but they're doing it in a second language. And I try to always keep that in the back of my mind and what challenges that presents for some folks. And I guess, you know, my point here is that, one off the cuff, it's like, yeah, of course ICANN should translate everything, of course. On the surface, it seems like just such a no-brainer. But I think what got me was a bit of the sticker shock. And I think Alan used the word non-trivial to refer to the translation expenses. And I would say very non-trivial. It's very expensive.
I was referring to the cost of managing volunteers, but yes.
Okay.
The original cost is even less trivial.
Yes. So, I think very significant budgetary changes would have to be considered in order to fund the idea of translation. To make everyone happy. And that's the other thing, is we're never going to make everyone happy. There's always going to be someone that has that feels that there's a community that's cut off because a certain language or a certain dialect is not offered them, and that's just human nature. So, I think the idea here was that we have so many very proficient individuals that are, very eloquent in English, even though it is not their primary language. So the thought here is that, yes, we could solicit volunteers to help alleviate those costs, and we should be looking for that at every opportunity. And to address Alan's concerns, they should be in groups, so that we wouldn't have just one person being the Spanish or French or Italian translator, that we would have as many folks as possible working as a group to translate that. And that, would, I think, introduce some checks and balances that would improve the quality of the translation. But I think that when we get to a point where we don't have volunteers to translate, then I've got to turn the question around and say, well, how important is this translation for the community when no one is willing to step up and at least translate an executive summary of a report? Is it really that important that we do this, or is it sufficient to have it just exclusively in English? So I think that's the other side of that question, is if no one is willing to make an investment of a few hours' work, then perhaps it's not necessary to do that work to begin with. Thanks.
So, you know, one thought that I have, actually, let me go to Alex. Alex.
Yeah, a quick comment. I'm just wondering, as we think about the volunteers and we think of how much we want to save the non-trivial cost, we also need to consider what incentives might be there for them to be volunteers and translate. It is all nice to try and save all the costs from ICANN, but then there must be also a motivation for them to be in those groups and continue translating on behalf of the community, because the need is there to translate. So I wanted to throw that back to us to think that there must be some sort of incentives. Thank you.
Okay. I think because we're kind of running out of, we've already run out of time. I think let's put this on the list. You know, one of the thoughts I had too is that when a working group spends so much time working on the exact words of a recommendation, to leave it to volunteers that don't do translations for a living, especially for a PDP that might impact something like consensus policies, it's something we need to think about. And so anyway, let's put this issue on email. And let's see what kind of reaction we get. And I think we make good progress, and we have to commit to finishing this up on Thursday. So with that commitment, anybody else with Alan, you have a comment?
Yeah, I have one very short comment on the translation. I'd be certainly happy with adding a statement somewhere saying ICANN should consider the use of volunteers where appropriate, but I don't think it should be any stronger than that.
Okay. Why don't, Marika, you put that on email, and let's see if people agree with that and are fine with that before starting another discussion. Okay, I will see everyone or talk to everyone on Thursday, and if anyone, I'll be at the next conference, so it'll be on the West Coast. If anyone's there and wants to find a joint place to do this, let me know. It'll be kind of early, but anyway. All right, guys, anything else?
Thanks, Jeff. Have safe travels, everybody who's going there.
Thanks. I will talk to you all on Thursday.
Bye.
Bye, everybody. Bye, Jeff.
Bye.
Bye.